Blog Talk Radio.
God damn it.
Kind of fallen in love with it, but I just want to say hello to everyone. I hope you guys are having a wonderful Friday evening. It's kind of overcast, muggy, not the kind of day you want to have in the spring here in Wisconsin, but it's not winter anymore, so I'll take that. But just glad to be here with you guys, pre-gaming a little bit for those of you that are going to live it up tonight, and just excited that it's been another 2 weeks, and we're back here with all of you. this is Peter and Kelly's Cocktail Hour. Mainly it's just 1 hour of hanging out every other Friday night, catching up on all the exciting things that are going on, and just hanging out with you guys and chatting, catching up a little bit. So, Kelly, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing fantastic. It has been a beautiful day, and I think you missed a day somewhere because you said Friday night, and it is Saturday night, which is the best night of the week. it has been a fantastic. You and me both, actually. But yeah, it's been a fantastic day. I had a little bit of a nap. I had a date with a dildo, and now I'm drinking some Kahlua and coffee. So it is a fantastic Saturday here for me.
That is awesome, and I've done most of that stuff. I won't tell you which one, but I have done most of that as well. But, I'm actually – tonight I decided to go a little late because I woke up feeling a little uneven and actually been working all day on a website, so it just seemed appropriate to drink a lot of Mountain Dew. And now I just need to calm down a little bit. So I'm actually having a Not Your Father's Root Beer, and it sounds ridiculous, but it's actually very, very tasty. And it's something a bartender told me once that's really good. She gives it to people for a hangover. They'll be passed out on the bar, and she'll give them Not Your Father's Root Beer, and within minutes they'll be back to life and drinking some more. So, that's always something that comes in handy. So you got to love that. But awesome.
I have had that Not Your Father's Root Beer, and it is actually really delicious. But, of course, if it was my father's root beer, it would probably taste a little bit more like Grand Marnier.
You have had it recently? It's actually not that bad. It starts out with a little bit rough because you're expecting root beer. It's hard root beer, but, after a while, it's actually got a pleasant taste to it. So, what's been new and exciting on your side of the world?
Well, I mean, the Cavaliers are killing it in the playoffs, and that is always exciting for the city of Cleveland and the life of Kelly. It is same old as same old. It is a fabulous day every day because I'm a fabulous person.
There you go. So what do you think of the playoffs? I mean, to me, it's gotten so bad. It's gotten to the point where they might as well not even play the season anymore. And being a fan of one of the two teams that's left in the NBA, I mean, how does that affect your enjoyment of the game, or do you actually like that it's that one-sided?
I mean, I'm usually not a fan of one-sided sports competitions whatsoever, but the fact that it is my team does make it a little bit more enjoyable for me, especially that beatdown we laid last night. I mean, it was the most points in playoffs in NBA history, the biggest lead at the half ever. It was so good. We scared Isaiah Thomas, and he doesn't even want to play anymore for the rest of the season. So, I mean, no doubt in my mind, we are going to absolutely sweep this series, and then we'll be going on to the finals. But, I mean, it's bad competition. It's bad TV. It's got to be bad for the ratings, but it's sure as hell enjoyable for Cavaliers fans.
No, I can totally see that side of it 100%. And I just read your post not that long ago about Isaiah Thomas' salty vagina, and I agree. That was the first thing I thought of when he left the game with an injury, because I was watching, but I didn't even notice him leave. I must have got caught up in something else, but I didn't even notice him leave. And when they mentioned he wasn't out on the floor, I was like, yeah, you know, it just sounds like a case of, you know, save myself for next year. Just, I mean, it was so bad that I started cringing a little bit, you know, because it just shouldn't happen like that in the Eastern Conference Finals. But the one thing I do like, and that I will give credit to the Cavaliers for, is that they never let up. And I know that that's something that most teams get ragged on for. Like, you're not supposed to rub it in. You're not supposed to, you know. But I like a team that doesn't stop, that doesn't take it easy. I like no mercy. And because that's the attitude they're going to have going into Golden State. You know, and you don't ever want to let up until it's all over, until you're holding the trophy in your hand. So I was actually very impressed by that. The other thing, even though I'm not a huge fan of LeBron James, last night his shot was so on. There were people in his face. I was trying to find things wrong with what he was doing, and there's people in his face, and he was dropping shots from just about wherever and whenever he wanted to, and I found that pretty impressive. The only thing more impressive was that sweet shot by J.R. Smith. So, good stuff, though.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was a fun game to watch being a fan. And people say that the Cavaliers, they've got the playoff switch, and they've definitely flipped that. If this was a regular season game and they went up by that much, there's no doubt in my mind the Stars would be resting. We'd be seeing them take it easy a little bit. But, I mean, you're right. This wasn't a playoff game for them. This was practice is what it looked like. I thought it was hilarious.
Right.
I made the comment that they kind of looked like the Harlem Globetrotters out on the field. They were dominating so much. And then after the game, Shaq went on his little Shaqed in a Fool, and he kept singing the theme song for the Harlem Globetrotters. So I guess I wasn't the only one thinking that way.
What's up with the little handshake? So have you noticed that, or am I the only one that noticed that? That, like, every pair of Cavs players have their own little handshake and pat on the back thing that they do. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the camaraderie. It's why they're such a fun team. I mean, these guys really enjoy and love playing together, and I think that really translates on the court presence. I think you can tell how much they respect each other and how much they just enjoy being there, and I think that's a big part of it.
I just think more than anything, I would have a hard time remembering which cute little handshake to do with which other guy, you know what I mean? Because they all had their own different ones, but I thought it was neat. And, I would say that last night I actually – They've started growing on me last night just because of how hard they played. I mean, they weren't just going out there and sloughing off and happened to get a lead. They pounded the shit out of the Celtics because they were playing that hard and they wanted it that bad. And I think that's one of the things that's missing in sports. And, you know, it's something we basically teach our kids, and they got mad at Bill Belichick for that. You know, he was taking it too hard on the other team sometimes. But I think, you know, sports is about domination. It's about going out there and giving your best. And if people are going to get upset at you for giving your best, I think that's bad for the sport. So I was actually pretty impressed watching Cleveland just go out there and give it their all. And the Celtics, you know, for as bad as they played, they actually hung in there quite a bit too, besides Isaiah Thomas. But,
I got to be honest, you kind of lost me with that little monologue there. All I heard was hard and want it so bad and domination, and I kind of got lost after that.
Oh, it's no big deal. That's a big deal. I kind of moved on anyway. So the other sports note that I was kind of thinking of that might affect you a little bit is LeGarrette Blount. What do you think about that acquisition for the Eagles, and how do you see that team kind of shaping up?
Oh, I absolutely love the acquisition. We're calling him now. He's now Philly Blount. I love that nickname.
Hilarious.
It's a lot of fun for
That's
me.
Awesome.
Yeah. But, I mean, definitely, that was the missing piece on our offense. We had issues with receiver, which Howie addressed early in the offseason, picking up Alshon Jeffrey, Torrey Smith. And the big bone of contention with Eagles fans was the fact that we don't have a power running back. We were hoping that we would address that in the draft by picking up either Dalvin Cook or Joe Mixon, but of course we did not do that. Both of those players were picked up right before our eyes in the third round, so we did not get a chance to pick them up. So it was the piece we were missing, and then Howie Roseman, being the genius negotiator that he is, did whatever kind of Howie voodoo magic he has and got LeGarrette Blount, who was the biggest power running back on the free agent market. So I think that is going to have a huge impact on the game of Carson Wentz. I think it's going to take a lot of pressure off him. We have to remember he's going into his sophomore year in the NFL, and I think that it is going to be a bright future for him this year. I am looking forward to this football season more than I ever have in my entire life. I can't wait for it to start. The only real issues I see is we still have some holes in our secondary, but I'm hoping that rookie Sidney Jones, when he comes back from his injury, he's going to be able to address that. I'm hoping the talent that we have, Jalen Mills, I'm hoping that he's going to get better, and it's going to be a bright season for Eagles fans. Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with that. You guys actually did draft a running back, Donald Pumphrey. Not a power back like you were saying, but yeah, I think Blount could be very, very helpful. The hard part for me is you don't really know what any player that just came out of the Patriots system is going to be like in any other team. I mean, I do know that LeGarrette Blount will not get 18 rushing touchdowns this year. I do know that, but I think he can still be good. I think he can be effective, but it's just kind of hard to know. Just like in fantasy, I never draft Patriots because you never know when you're going to get them, except for Gronkowski. Running backs, you never really know. I do know that he did good with Pittsburgh, so it's very possible that he'll come in and have a very stellar season again. But that's the exciting part about football is you never really know.
Yeah, exactly. I completely agree with that. And I'm not expecting him to get 18 rushing touchdowns either. I mean, when you're sharing the backfield with a guy like Darren Sproles, you're not going to get nearly as many touches as what you did with the Patriots. And especially considering that the Eagles, under Doug Peterson, they're a very pass-heavy offense. So I'm not expecting him to have the same kind of numbers, but I am expecting him to show that same kind of power that he showed when he was in New England. And I think that that's, like I said, it's the missing piece for us. And I think that that is going to bring our offense to new levels.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100% on that. I think the Eagles are on their way to having a pretty solid squad. So I thought that was probably something you were looking forward to with adding LeGarrette Blount. Off the subject a little bit, but going kind of to where we were last week, talking about free speech. And we all took the side of free speech last week pretty much. We had Mark Costa from The Shit Show and The Good Fathers on, and we all took the side of free speech because, in America, a lot of us believe that that's what we should have. But I don't know how big of a hockey fan you are, and I don't follow it real closely, but I did see today that one of the Ducks players used a gay slur against the Predators. And it just kind of jumped out at me, as people that were defending, free speech. There are still certain topics that you're not free to speak about or that you're at least looked down heavily on. What's your take on that? How do you feel about free speech when it comes to possibly offending someone, in their personal beliefs?
Now, do you have an exact quote of what was said? Because I didn't actually see the exact quote.
I suppose I should have looked that up. Oh, I saw that he got fined $10,000, which isn't a lot. So it must not have been anything completely, you know, anything really bad. I'm guessing it was just kind of aimed at someone. Not real pointedly. I'm looking it up right now. But
I mean, you know, when it comes to offending people, I mean, you do have to be careful when you are somebody that's in the public eye, because the public will absolutely jump on you for that. But I mean, you have to remember, though, these people are speaking in their everyday vernacular on occasion. And I know we all say things. I know I'm extremely guilty of it, that could be construed as offensive. To me, when it comes to any kind of slur, whether it be a gay slur or a racial slur or anything of that nature, it's all about intent. Did he intend to put down gay people? I don't think he did. I think he was just, you know, speaking based on the speech patterns of the day, the people he listens to. We all pick up speech patterns from the people we hang out with, and it came out that way is the way I would assume it happened. I don't think he meant to put down gay people. I'm sure he doesn't want to offend anyone. I'm sure the only person he really wanted to piss off was the guy on the opposite team that he was saying it about. And I think people have become so sensitive when it comes to these kind of things. You can find offense in almost anything people say. And I think people really need to just put on their big girl panties and get over it already.
Right. See, I think it's an interesting topic because of, I think it's an interesting topic just because of what we were talking about. But now that I look at it, he actually called a referee a cocksucker, which to me is not a gay slur at all. I mean, it's one of those things that you can, I guess, technically you could say it's a gay slur. But cocksucker is something that very straight people call very straight people all the time. So, I think that's a little bit different. Especially, but it was aimed at a referee, and that's probably the reason why they got offended. I have to ask, though,
how many people in their lifetime has not called a referee a cocksucker? I have called pretty much every NFL referee a cocksucker at one point in my lifetime, and I don't think any of them are actually gay. I'm sure that they go home after they do their refereeing and they sleep with their wives. So I'm not putting down gay people when I say cocksucker. It's just something that people say.
Right. I guess I actually have never really thought of it as a gay term in any way. And so when I read it, I was kind of shocked because there's more than, not everybody that is a cocksucker is gay, to put it lightly. But, I guess why it stuck out to me more than the words they said and more that, more than all of that, it's just in this society, people can be so overly sensitive to the point that I get confused because we do have the freedom of speech, but you don't have the right to be racist. And that, to me, that should be defended as well. I know that it creates kind of a gray line, but why can't someone dislike me because of the color of my skin? Isn't that a right that we have? Or should have as Americans? So I think it's interesting that we have all of these rights, and gay people can have rights, and everybody else can have rights, but the other people can't have the rights to say something negative against them. So stuck out to me. I don't know if you have any other thoughts on that topic, but I think it's an interesting subject, and it's something that a lot of people hesitate to talk to because we've just been taught that you have the right to freedom of speech unless it offends this person or unless, you know, it covers this ground. But that's not really freedom. It's not really freedom if you can't call someone what they are. So do you have any feelings on that?
To me, when you become offended, I think that that's a good thing. I think when you find that thing that offends you, it gives you the power to go out and fight against it. And I think it's freedom of speech in both ways. You have the right to call somebody, let's say, a cocksucker, and gay people, they have the right to be offended. And you know what? If gay people are offended by the term cocksucker, then maybe when they hear that, they need to go out there and raise awareness that that could be something that could be construed as offensive. When you call somebody that obviously does not suck a cock a cocksucker, that could be a slur against gay people. It's the same thing with the entire racial matter. I mean, sometimes people say things that are just so inherently hateful sounding that it kind of opens up the eyes of people that may not have been exposed to that level of racism before. And it says, hey, maybe these people that have been speaking out against this have a point, and it could put them on the side of the people that feel oppressed. I think that that's the power of words. You can make people rise to action just by saying how you feel. And I don't think anybody should hold that back. I think when it comes to having rights, you have the right to do pretty much anything you want until you start infringing on someone else's rights. And last time I checked, words do not infringe on anyone else's rights. It's when you start acting upon those words. It's when you start having violent tendencies because of the way you feel. That's when you start infringing on someone else's rights. So if you get offended by words, then by all means, go out there and fight against what is offending you. But realize at the same time, you can't stop people from speaking what is in their minds. You can't stop anyone from saying what they're going to say. So if you want to fight against it, do it. But at the same time, don't infringe on anyone else's right. You have the right to fight against it. They have the right to say it. And it's by opening up dialogues that we can expose these kind of things. So I think it's extremely healthy. And I think people need to stop whining about it and start doing something about it. And it looks like Peter has lost us on the line. He is going to be coming back here shortly. But when it comes to free speech, it is such an important topic. And I have been a huge, huge supporter of people saying what is on their minds. I have no filter. And you know what? I really don't care. If you're offended by the things I say, then that's absolutely great. And it sounds to me like we have got Peter back. Hopefully he heard my mic dropping moment when it comes to people shutting up and saying what they want. And right, people, like I said, people need to stop crying and start taking action.
Right. No, I agree with you 100%. I think it's one of the confusing things about this time, that so many people that haven't always had freedom all of a sudden have it, and now nobody really knows what to do with it. So I think it's confusing in a lot of ways. But I think it's still a great thing, and I'm proud to be an American. But we're actually getting close. I think we have a guest calling in here in a few minutes. But I know you wanted to talk about Chris Cornell, and I wanted to give you plenty of time to do that. So, you know, for those people that have heard and have followed it, Chris Cornell, one of the, you know, the legends of Seattle grunge rock, passed away at the age of 52. And it was a mournful time for those of us that were fans of that. And I know you had something on your mind about it.
When it comes to Chris Cornell, I mean, he's not just a legend of the Seattle grunge scene. He's a legend in music in general. When I heard the news that he had died, I was actually sitting at the time in a quiet place. I was with a baby boomer, a Gen Xer, and a millennial. I'm not going to tell you which one I am because I don't like to give up my age. But three different generations. And all three of us said what an absolute legend he was and how much the music industry is going to miss both his unique and powerful voice. He was the voice of multiple generations for sure. But when it comes to his death, the reports have come out that now it was a suicide. Is what they're saying. They're saying it may have had something to do with prescription drugs he was taking that can cause suicidal thoughts and tendencies. But so many people came out after the fact and they were absolutely shocked that a person like Chris Cornell could take his own life. And to me, these people that were saying that obviously weren't paying attention. If you go back and you listen to the actual lyrics of pretty much all of his songs, you can hear that most of them, they sound like a cry for help is what they sound like. I mean, if you take the lyrics out of context without the actual musical background, we can take the song, for example, Fell on Black Days, one of my favorite Soundgarden songs of all time. And I hope everyone out there is familiar with it. If you're not, go back and listen to it. But I mean, he says right in the song, just when every day seemed to greet me with a smile, sunspots have faded. And now I'm doing time because I fell on block days. Whomsoever I've cured, I've sickened now. And whomsoever I've cradled, I've put you down. I'm a searchlight soul, they say, but I can't see it in the night. I'm only faking when I get it right, because I fell on black days. Now, if that is not a cry for help with your depression, I don't know what the fuck is. If you look at some of their other songs, if you look at Black Hole Sun, I mean, think about it. Even the name in and of itself screams somebody that's dealing with depression deep inside their soul. If you listen to the way he sings those lyrics, what sets Chris Cornell apart? I actually had this debate with somebody that I'm very close to the other day, and we were talking about the difference between somebody like Chris Cornell and somebody like Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins. To me, what sets their talent apart is the fact that you can hear in Chris Cornell's voice that he feels everything that he sings. Billy Corgan, brilliant songwriting, absolutely brilliant. But Chris Cornell, brilliant songwriting and the depth of emotion that matches those kind of lyrics. And anyone that was surprised by his suicide absolutely was not paying attention to the message of those songs whatsoever. I mean, think about it. They even had a song called Pretty Noose, and he hung himself, hanged himself, however you're supposed to say it. I mean, to me, that's the tragedy. We had the same thing with the death of Robin Williams. Everybody was so surprised. But if you look at that photos of him while he's smiling, you can see that sadness hidden behind his eyes. You can see it in him. And everyone was so completely shocked that somebody so funny that was doing so much to lift up all these other people could be feeling like that. And that is the danger of depression. It is this hidden disease that nobody actually knows you're suffering unless you say something. And a person with depression doesn't want to put their problems onto other people. They suffer in silence, and it is up to those closest to them to see those warning signs in their art or in their smile or in that hidden sadness in their eyes to do something to help that person before it's too late. So everybody out there, I want you, I challenge you, the people you love, the people you care about, look at them. Look at their small little actions. Look at the kind of art they put forth. Look at the things that they're saying when they think nobody is listening. Look at their eyes when they think nobody is watching them. And look for those warning signs and get them the help that they need before it's too late. Because once somebody takes their own life, it's too late to go back and help them.
Wow, that's amazing and very, very beautiful. And we've actually, on the other rivalry shows, we've actually had someone who has dealt with quite a bit of suicide in his life and talked about the same exact thing. So we've been over that topic. And I agree with you 100%. And if anybody is familiar at all with the grunge movement, it's very heavy in suicide and drugs and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, to me, it's not a surprise at all. I mean, after, you know, Kurt, we don't know if he was actually murdered or committed suicide, but it's common practice, common thought is that he committed suicide. And then you got Layne Staley, you know, with the drugs, and can never remember his name from Stone Temple Pilots with the drug addiction. So, you know, it's heavy
Scott
in
Weiland.
There. And, you know, Scott Weiland, you just hope for the rest of the guys that they're all right, you know, because there is a pretty strong constituency still of them out there. Including Pearl Jam and those guys, and you just gotta hope that, you know, there is.
Oh, Eddie!
Still
oh, God! Don't get me started on Eddie Vedder. I can't stand Eddie Vedder. That guy is the biggest faker in the world. There is no emotional depth to Eddie Vedder whatsoever. I mean, sure, their first album, their early stuff, it was great songwriting. You know, there was some good lyrics in there, but he has got the emotional depth of a goldfish.
Yeah, I'm actually a fan of Eddie Vedder. I can see what you're saying, but I'm actually a fan, and the reason why I am a fan has to do with the band Temple of the Dog, which I don't think a lot of people know is actually Chris Cornell and Eddie Vedder before anybody really knew who they were. Chris Cornell was actually writing a song, I believe it was for one of the members of Mudhoney, I believe, who had passed away. It was called Say Hello to Heaven, which I've actually listened to that song quite a few times since Chris Cornell died to see if I could get any insight into his feelings on the afterlife and that kind of thing. But Eddie actually came in before, I don't think they even knew who each other were, and he sang Chris Cornell was having trouble hitting the notes on, I can't think of the name of the song right now, Eddie Vedder took over, said, let me try it, and ended up nailing it. And it was pretty, it's a pretty amazing song. So, but yeah, I see what you're saying with that. But Pearl Jam is still, to me, one of the great bands of the movement. And a lot of it even comes down to the fact that the name of their band, well, first, the name of their band was Mookie Blaylock, because that was Eddie Vedder's favorite basketball player. And then he ended up naming it Pearl Jam because his grandma's name was Pearl, and she made jam with hallucinogenics in it. So to me, that's very interesting stuff, and I like the guy. But yeah, it just, I'm with you on that. I hope that if they're, that people do start taking notice of the people around them and start seeing, like you said, the pain in their eyes, because, you know, suicide and depression is a very real thing. I've actually dealt with 5 cases of it in a relatively small time, and it's something that there's no explanation to, and it just kind of rocks your world in a very negative way. So, I think it's an interesting topic, and I'm glad you chose to bring it up and to talk about it.
Well, thank you. And I mean, like I said, it's something that has been plaguing the music industry ever since the time of Kurt Cobain.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's all of that. I mean, a lot of musicians, and like you, I'm glad you brought up Robin Williams, because a lot of people say things like, how could someone that funny be depressed? Pay attention to that stuff. A lot of creative people, a lot of comedians have been through more tragedy than most. And so, it's not an uncommon thing for people involved in the entertainment industry to be dealing with very severe issues of depression or anything like that, you know. So, right now we're just waiting for, we have a guest calling in fairly soon. But what do you got planned for the near future? Anything real exciting?
I mean, every day is exciting for me, but honestly, I'm just going to get through this weekend, get through the coming week, and then next weekend, we've got, you know, the holiday Memorial Day coming up very soon, and that, of course, is a fantastic shopping time, so that is going to be very fun for me. Might get myself some new shoes. I won't be buying big baller shoes, but I'll be buying big stiletto shoes for sure.
Nice. Sounds good. Yeah, like you said, it's just kind of one day blends into the next, especially with all I've gotten on with going on with the Rivalry Network. And one thing I want to throw out there, since we have a minute, I forgot to mention the shows that we have on the Rivalry Network. We actually have on Monday nights, we have The Flip Side with Mark and Rich. On Tuesdays, we have Rivalry Sports with Mark Kelly and myself. On Wednesdays, we have the Shit Show, and those of you that listened in last time, you heard Mark Costa on. He's one half of that with Joshua Sweetland, and it's actually a very interesting show. They cover just about any topic out there. So that's all going on. And then on Thursdays, now Mark Kelly is doing his own baseball show, and he's having a different guest on every week, at least until he finds someone a little bit more consistent with that. Fridays, we have Peter Wiseman's Entertainment Frenzy, which has been very, very fun. And Saturdays, we have Tonight. Sundays, we're still looking for a co-host for Betty Cantley, and we'll have Basketball Talk. So excited about that. I actually spent most of the day today setting up our website, rivalrynetwork1.com. So if you guys want to go and check that out, I actually have a list of the radio shows there. You can click on any one and get the most recent episode. We also have, you know, meet our staff page. You can have our blog there. It's actually didn't start updating yet, but with the next stories coming out, they'll all be updated on right on the website there, rivalrynetwork1.com. And I'm going to be working on some more tonight and tomorrow, trying to fill it all out completely. So setting things going on, and just looking forward to sharing more and more with you guys. Kelly, I didn't give you an opportunity in the beginning, but if you could tell us where we can find you on social media and all the things that you got going on with your radio show and whatnot.
Absolutely. My show is The Red Zone with Kelly and Rashawn. Me and my co-host, Rashawn the Don, we are bringing the sexy back to sports. It is live, it is unfiltered, and it's a lot of fun. We talk a lot of sports, we have a lot of insight, and we have a lot of laughs, too. You can follow the show on Twitter at The Red Zone Live. We also have the Facebook page, The Red Zone Live. You can follow myself on Twitter. I'm going to spell my name because it's spelled very funny. But you can find me on Twitter at K-E-L-L-I-E. R-U-T-T-A-R. You can find me on Facebook under the same name. I'll spell it one more time. K-E-L-L-I-E-R-U-T-T-A-R. And our show, The Red Zone, it is part of the Momentum Shift Radio family of shows. You can check out all of our shows on blogtalkradio.com/momentumshift. We are also sponsored by goingfor2.com, which is a great site for your DFS fantasy sports needs. There's also a lot of cool insight articles on there, and you can check all of our shows on demand. It's goingfor2.com. So be sure to check that out. And I'm also a participant in our sometime show, the Momentum Shift Weekly Rewind, which is a roundtable style show where different members and friends of the Momentum Shift family, we get together, we each bring a different question to the table, and then we sit around and we talk and we debate and we laugh. So everything I do is pretty uncensored. I don't like people putting rules on me. If I can't speak my mind, I don't do it. So be sure you follow me and you'll get all of the uncensored Kelly fun.
That sounds like a great time. So that roundtable show that you guys do, I've never actually listened into it. What is that again?
Well, what we do is before the show starts is we each choose a question that we're going to pose to the roundtable. Like sometimes we do, you know, your top five biggest sports busts. Or, you know, what's your opinion on this relevant topic, that kind of thing. And then we each take it in turn to give our answer to that question. And then once everybody has spoken, we'll go back, we'll debate, we'll fight. And a lot of times there's a lot of laughs. It's a lot of funny people on that show. Myself and my co-host, Rashawn, we're usually on it. Courtney Harden, who is the host of The Real Deal with Courtney Harden, is usually on it. You can follow Courtney on Twitter at GetTheRealDeal. We also have another real dealer, Damian Adams, who is a regular guest on there. And his show, The Real Deal with Damian Adams, is also a lot of fun. So it's a lot of different voices and different opinions from different generations and different voices in sports. We all bring something fun and relevant. We consider it like a family dinner. It's just like when you get together with your family, you've got, you know, the crazy drunk uncle, you got, you know, I'm the cool aunt, I guess. I don't know what exactly I am, or the cool younger sister, but I mean, it's a lot of fun. We have usually, you know, a funny topic, and then we have a couple of serious ones. So it's a good time. Put it out usually every other week, whenever we can all get together, just like a real family dinner.
And that does sound like a good time. I'll have to tune into that. So, that's pretty cool. But I'm actually, as I'm talking to you guys, I'm actually watching WNBA game that I told you about, Kelly the Don, and it's definitely not like the NBA. 22-21 at the end of the first quarter. So it's having a hard time keeping my interest. But I'm on the other line right now. We do have our guest going in, and Justin is actually someone I've known since high school. He's part of our military, which I'm very thankful to him for serving. He can tell us a little bit more about that. But he's calling in tonight to tell us something in the cocktail hour about his home brewing process. And very excited to have you on the line, Justin. How are you doing today, my friend?
Peter, what's up, brother?
Not a whole lot, man. Not a whole lot. So, what you got going on with your Saturday night? You doing a little bit of pre-gaming or just hanging out with the family, or what you got going on?
You know how it is, man. Hey, it's good to hear your voice, brother. It's been way, way too long. But, yeah, man, just putting back a few West Coast beers and cooking dinner for the boys as the wife is working. So, you know how it is, man, just enjoying life. You know how it is.
There you go. Well, the cool thing is, I don't know if Kelly knows, but Justin is a Packer fan. Like, I'm a Packer fan, so we got you all weighed right now, like you had me last week. But, Justin, what are your thoughts on what the Packers have done this offseason with the draft? And actually, something very incredible for the Packers in free agency, going out and bringing in four different guys, and then the moves that they made in the draft. Do you have any opinions on that?
Well, yeah, man, the free agents is like, I think that's four more than we normally do, right? You see this time of year. And, you know, the draft, I think the draft was pretty good. You know, I probably, like most Packer fans, I was a little bit, you know, frustrated when we traded out of the first round. I should have expected that when we passed on Watt. But, you know, I think, honestly, at the end of the day, Beagle's probably a better prepared linebacker for the NFL. But, you know, the foot injury, we've already seen it rear its ugly head already, so... you know, sometimes that's just bad luck, but yeah, I think King's going to be probably starting. I mean, honestly, I don't know. I don't think there's no way in hell Gunter upseeds, you know, or seeds him out of this job. So
right.
I see the right. him definitely being a starter probably this year.
Absolutely, and as a Packer fan, you know, it's not like if Ted Thompson never got a pick wrong, then I could see him not taking a risk on a guy like Watt, but. He isn't really that accurate, especially in the first round. So why don't you go out and get the guy that's going to make your fans happy and just take a risk on him and you never know. You know what I mean? But
well, I mean,
it's
I think kind
of
well, when he gave up Watt, and then look what he ended up getting. He ended up getting Beagle and then the safety, right? So,
right.
I mean,
it's
2-for-1, you know. Who knows? It's just still a lot of – it's just, you know, how us Packer fans are, man. We love our Badgers and we love our Packers. You know, we
right.
married people. And
that's what I'm saying.
You know, it's
I
beautiful time of year.
Right. I think he made a smart decision, but every once in a while you just want him to take a risk on a good Packer player or a Badger player.
Yeah.
But
oh, yeah. Yeah, trust me, I got a bunch of friends that are Steelers fans, and they're loving it right now. They're rubbing it in my face, but we'll see how that goes.
I bet. So tell us a little bit about the home brewing beer process. Is it something that's easy to do, fun to do? What gets you going with that?
You know what, man? It was it was kind of weird the fact that I got into it in the first place. You know, being a Marine, we are all about processes and, you know, learning the small things and mastering those small things and, you know, making a better product at the end of the day. And it was weird when I got into homebrewing. That's really what it is, man. It's just a simple process. It's, you know, hot water turning frickin' grains, getting the sugar out of it. And then you add a little bit of yeast, and then suddenly you got a beer a few weeks later. And it's wow, really, really simple. I was kind of surprised. I mean, it's not a lot to it. But it's just, honestly, it's, you know, cleaning and sanitizing is about 98% of the frickin' process. So, again, as a Marine, we're good at cleaning shit, so... I guess it was a natural fit. But yes, it's
there you
cool.
go. There you go.
It's kind of peaceful, and it really is nice to just get a process. It just kind of slows you down, and you know, it's just something that kind of takes out a couple hours of your weekend, and at the end of the day, you get something that's kind of cool. Because at the end of the day, I end up sharing about, you know, most of my product. I mean, if I make 5 gallons of beer, I end up sharing probably 4 gallons of it with other people just to try to see if it's any good and how they like it and get, you know, positive feedback or negative, and then, you know, go from there and just refine the process.
So is there different ways that you can do it to get different flavored beers or dark beers or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, man. It's, geez, you know, probably 20 years ago, you know, homebrewing was a little bit more difficult because it wasn't as much, you know, advanced in technology. But man, if you do all grain or if you do, you can do DME or LME, which is liquid malt extracts or dry malt extract, which, again, it's an amazing process. So they basically do have to work for you. All you do is dump it in boiling water and you're good to go. But there's so many different ways you can do with it. And you add different hops and different yeasts and stuff like that. And it's, you know, it's a really cool thing that once you kind of figure it out, now again, I'm still learning, man. It's a cool thing about it, I think. It's a continuous learning process. So, you know, I mean, these guys that own breweries and stuff like that, even they're still learning. So that's, I think that's the cool thing about it. It's just the limitless process that you can continue to refine and continue to reform and, you know, use what you have to make it better. So that's what makes it, I think, the most best part about it is that it kind of makes it different for every single person that does it. So it's cool.
That's pretty cool. Kelly, how do you feel about beer? Are you a fan?
Actually, I am a fan of beer, and Yeah, you know what's really cool for me too is my father is actually, he's an ex-military. He was a naval officer, but he lived up in your guys' neck of the woods for a while, and he became a huge Packer fan. And when he was living up there, he was brewing his own beer too. So it's kind of almost
awesome.
Listening to the process. It's almost like kind of listening to my father talk again. So, I mean, that's definitely cool for me. But yeah, I like beer. I am a East Coaster at heart, though, so my favorite beer is Yingling, which I know you guys can't get out there. It's a Philly beer. Definitely my favorite. And then, of course, from my time in New England, I'm also a fan of the Samuel Adams. But I'm sure your homebrew beers are very delicious as well. I'm kind of an IPA fan. I'm a dark beer fan. So, I mean, that's really definitely cool for me.
Yeah, interesting enough, my first roommate in the Marine Corps was a guy, he was from Philly, so he introduced me to Yingling for the first time. And it was probably almost 20 years ago now. And I never even heard of that stuff, so it's pretty decent beer. It's not too bad, I'll be honest with you. It's much, much better than I think most of the stuff I've seen from Sam Adams. But, it's a cool hobby. It's great. And like I said, you can find beers you like all over the United States or the world, and then try to replicate them. Because again, I've become a big fan of this. And you said you love IPAs. I too am a huge IPA fan. I love that and coffee stouts. But when I come back east, like I said, when I retire here next year, I'm moving down to South Carolina. They don't have a lot of West Coast IPAs out there, so I'm going to have to learn how to brew those. And that's the cool thing about it. I can bring those right into my house, and even if they're not accessible, at the store, I can brew them up.
That's pretty.
I have to ask though. When you brew your own beer, what kind of alcohol content is that? Is that the same kind of alcohol content that you get in a normal beer, or is it more like a premium beer where it's a higher, like 13% alcohol content? How does that work?
It really depends on the recipe. I've tried a spotted clone a couple times, and that clocks in right about 4.2-4.3%. It really depends on the fermentable sugars in the recipe that you use. So, like I said, probably the bigger beers, like the big stouts, the Russian stouts, stuff like that, the grain bill is going to be much bigger. It's going to be a little bit more difficult to brew. The smaller beers, though, again, there's a cream ale that I've been working on. It's all dry malt extracts. It's a pretty simple recipe, just some dry malt extract, a little bit of hops. That one clocks in about 4%. So it really leaves you up to how much product you want to use. And it really comes down to, like I said, how much sugar you get out of the grains. The more sugar you get, the more the yeast can eat, and the happier they get, and the more alcohol that comes out of it. So it's definitely flexible.
So is beer one of those things that if you let it ferment longer, it becomes higher, more potent, or is that not the case with beer like it is with other alcohols?
Well, I mean, it's, typically – most beers, honestly, you could literally, if you have a good process, you can have them in the keg or in the bottle in a couple weeks. But typically, like I said, if you want to do like a big coffee stout or like a bourbon barrel aged stout or something like that, those things, you can still let them sit quite a bit longer, a couple, 2-3 months. And at the end of the day, it's really about how much sugar gets fermented in the initial process that creates the alcohol content. So it's kind of, it's really cool. You can be as creative as you want to be.
It's actually a very interesting thing. Something, either that or wine or both, I think would be very fun just to, like you said, kind of, learn the process and try to create stuff and see how it happens. And I actually live about a mile and a half away from Leinenkugel. And just going on the tour there.
Oh, yeah.
kind of helps me understand the process that you're talking about a little bit. But that's actually a very underrated thing here in Wisconsin is going on a tour through Leinenkugel's. You pay a dollar to get in and get to learn everything about it. Then at the end, they give you 4 samples of beer. So that's a pretty neat thing. But that's cool.
The next time you get up there, Pete, you got to, Jake is a retired Marine Corps captain, and both of his sons joined the Marine Corps. They actually went in about the same time I did. Because that was
his
stipulation for them to own part of the business. He said, hey, you got to join the Marine Corps for at least 4 years. And, Jake's a huge supporter of the Marine Corps. I love that guy. I got to meet him quite a few times when I was right before I shipped out. And I'm telling you, man, those guys are it shows in their business and their the product and the way they do it. I mean, it's just an absolute professional system. So Yeah, next time you see him, man, if you get up there, tell him we said hi and give him a big Semper Fi for me.
There you go. And for a beer that hasn't really made it all that national, it is a very interesting beer. Some of the best flavored beers I've actually had, and it sounds crazy, but the summer shandies that actually have, like, lemonade in them and that kind of stuff, they make it very well. It's actually what the drink that I drink when I'm out golfing. It's about the only time I can handle that because it's a little bit tart. But, hey, buddy.
No, you're completely right. Dude, that Sunset Wheat, probably my favorite line of cooler beer out of their whole portfolio. I'm telling you, and we can actually get that out here in California. They've got that, the Summer Shandy. And we only get the Shandies. Honestly, I would kill for a freaking Liney's Original right about now. Because that's
probably... But they don't have that out there.
Oh, not at all. Just the Shandies and stuff, the seasonals. But that Sunset Wheat, man, I could keep a 12-pack at my house every day of the week. And it's just a beautiful, wonderful beer. It's really, really good.
I agree with you, and that's actually one of the samples I had at the end of the tour. And, you know, I just thought, well, that would be interesting. It's probably going to be gross because it's orange-flavored, but it's just the perfect amount of flavor, and it's very, very good. But, hey, Justin, I want to thank you for coming on. We're actually running out of time. We're getting to the end of our show, and I want to thank you for coming on with us. Hopefully we can talk to you again soon. Maybe as we get closer to the Packers season, I can even have you on one of my sports shows. But, yeah, thank you so much for coming on. Have a great night, and good luck with everything you got going on.
Now, Peter, I appreciate it. And, hey, man, Eric Larson, he makes his own wine, so maybe you can pull him on here one night too. But, hey, man, I really appreciate it. Congratulations on your success with your show, and, you know, hopefully it continues to keep blowing up. And, yeah, I'd love to talk football with you, man, when it gets closer.
Sounds good. We'll definitely do that. I appreciate you, man.
All right, brother.
Yeah, cheers. Thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Hey, you too, ma'am. Have a good night. Cheers.
Hey, we do. I want to throw this in, Justin, before you go. We do appreciate your service in the military. I don't know how all of our listeners feel about that, but for me, it's a very important thing. I have 4 children and a wonderful family that I love, and I'm glad you guys keep them safe. So thank you for all you do.
Hey, that's what it's all about, man. Like I said, it's an easy job because of people like you and your listeners. That's why we do what we do, man. I don't even think twice about it. It's why our country is awesome and why we love what we do, and that's why we're here.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you guys.
All right, brother. Take care. Cheers.
All right. So, yeah, that's another episode almost done. We have about 8 minutes left, Kelly. Kind of an interesting thing there. And what was the beer that you guys were talking about? Did you say Eisling?
No, it's Yingling, and it's a Pennsylvania beer. And actually, we didn't have it here in Ohio for the longest time. It was funny. We used to make jokes. We used to jump across the border to one of the famous Pennsylvania beer distributors because they've got really weird alcohol laws in Pennsylvania. And we would pick up cases of it to bring back because it is such a delicious beer. But I think it was about 5 years ago they actually started distributing here in Ohio. So now I can actually walk into my local convenience store and I could buy a 6-pack of it. And it's just a good, smooth beer. It goes down really good on a summer hot day.
Yeah, sounds good. I'm actually looking it up right now. So tell me a little bit about the weird Pennsylvania laws, because Wisconsin is one of the obviously we're, you know, our baseball team is the Brewers. So we know a little bit about beer around here, but so everybody thinks that we have weird laws. What's different about the Pennsylvania law?
Well, I mean, in Pennsylvania, you can only buy a beer from somebody that is a licensed state beer distributor. I mean, you have to go to these special places to buy any kind of alcohol. And I actually found out rather recently that liquor stores in Pennsylvania, the people that work there, they're actually state employees, just like you would get at the post office. I had no idea. But I mean, to me, I grew up in Connecticut, and Connecticut has got some of the strictest alcohol laws around. We used to call our liquor stores, we call them package stores, or the packy for short, but it was like the sweetest job on the planet, because in Connecticut, you can only buy liquor until 8 p.m. So, I mean, you own one of those places. You can't buy it all on Sunday. So it's a private business. It's not state run there. But if you own one of those businesses, you're only open from like noon to eight, Monday through Saturday. Then you get every Sunday off. I mean, that is like a football fan's dream job right there. And then I came to Ohio. One of the first times I was in Ohio, somebody took me to one of the drive-thrus, and I was all like, oh my God, you can like buy alcohol. You never have to get out of your car. And I was like so amazed at that. And then I found out they only have drive-thrus in like kind of the scuzzy poor neighborhoods. And I kind of got over it real quick, but it was like just this big thing that you could drive into one of these places until like 1 a.m. and buy beer without ever getting out of your car. It was like, you know, an alcoholic's dream right there.
You go to the right places in Wisconsin, you can actually get beer to go in to-go cups. Certain bars, you gotta know where they are. But on a Sunday morning, there was a bar that was 2.5 blocks away from my house, and they would give Bloody Marys in to-go cups. So that was pretty neat. They put the straw in there for you and everything, so good stuff there. But hey, you can get them at the bowling alleys, too. They'll give you, like, a big styrofoam cup with a lid and a straw. So, yeah, it's kind of crazy because just across the border in Minnesota, then they have the same kind of rules kind of you were talking about. They don't sell beer on Sundays. They don't sell it in grocery stores. I don't think they have, like, I don't think it's state run, but their alcohol levels for DUI is actually higher, or was higher. They changed it now. And their bar close was an hour early. So everybody would get drunk in Minnesota and then at 1 o'clock cruise across the border to Wisconsin. But they ended up having to choose, you know, until 2 o'clock, but they ended up having to change that law because of all the drunk driving accidents when you got drunk people flying across the border trying to make that last hour at the bar. And
it was,
you know,
kind of like that for
me
when I lived in Connecticut. Since we stopped selling at 8 o'clock, I lived very close to the border of Rhode Island, and they sold till 10 o'clock there. So if you didn't make it to the store in Connecticut on time, you could just hop across the border in 10 minutes and go buy your beer in Rhode Island.
That's awesome. And around here, we actually have off sale at a lot of places until midnight. But yeah, for the most part, it's 9 o'clock here. So it's just crazy how that's different all across the country. I know when I was down in Indianapolis, they actually had a 3 o'clock bar close, and it felt like it almost got to the point where you were out too long, you know, because in Minnesota at 1 o'clock, you're like, really, the night just started. But down there, it was like, dang, it's 3 o'clock and I'm out of cash. So, but speaking of being out, we're actually done with another show. Thanks for joining me again, Kelly, and really excited about where this show is headed. I feel like we're going to find some more really cool guests and probably end up having to expand here if we both have the time to put it into our schedule, go a little bit longer once we get cruising here. But for now, this is awesome just to have that one cocktail hour, get to know some of the cool people out there and, you know, chat amongst ourselves. But thank you for coming on board, and I hope you have yourself a tremendous 2 weeks. I know I'll talk to you sometime before that, and good luck for the Cavs.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Peter, and it's always a pleasure to have cocktail hour with you. It's definitely one of the highlights of my every 2 weeks. It's an excuse for me to sit down and get drunk and talk about some cool topics that, you know, I usually don't get a chance to talk to you on air. So I hope our listeners, you know, get to enjoy that kind of passion we have for other things besides just sports.
Absolutely. And it's kind of funny because this is the my wife, when she tries to differentiate between which show I'm doing which night, she says, so tonight's the get drunk for an hour one, right? So, that's not what I do. I sit down and I actually sit down and have, you know, sip on a drink and have a good time and talk. But I think it's funny that that's how she sees it. But thank you so much, Kelly. I'm having a blast doing this, and I can't wait to see what the future brings. Thank you so much, and we will talk to you all in 2 weeks in the next cocktail hour.